from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's always something new with e-commerce giant Amazon. New products, new services, charging into industries you'd never imagine, like their new Texas wind farm, and a whole lot of us welcome them with open arms. Soon, literally, with their new service, Amazon Key, they'll be right through our front doors and into our homes when we're not there. And Wall Street's still in love. This hour on Point, just how wide can Amazon flow? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you ready to let Amazon walk in your front door, stock your kitchen, sell you everything? When will we see peak Amazon? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Last week, news out about a new in-home delivery service, Amazon Key. On Wednesday, Amazon was talking about it, that would let them come through the door. We'll look at the details, but here's a bit from the ad Amazon put out to promote the new service, not just for deliveries, but you could open that door remotely for just anybody with Amazon Key, they say.
With the Amazon Key app, you can also grant access to the people you trust. Let's say you need to remotely manage guest access to the front door of your home, maybe to let in your dog walker, a friend, or maybe to let in a team of home cleaning ninjas.
Dog walkers, friends, and home cleaning ninjas sounds pretty great, maybe. Some people found it a little bit creepy. Here was Stephen Colbert with his own hot take on the new Amazon Key on The Late Show last week.
Amazon Key, a new service that lets couriers unlock your front door. It's perfect for anyone who loves their Uber driver but wishes there was a way they could sneak in and watch you sleep.
Okay, maybe that's not as appealing. Later this hour, we'll look at Amazon's big new plans for a new second headquarters, HQ2. But let's kick off today in Seattle, home to Amazon's HQ1. Matt Day is business reporter for the Seattle Times, spends a lot of time watching the Amazon story. Matt, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Hello.
Hi. We've got a lot to look at here, but can we start with Amazon Key? How does it work? How and by what mechanism would they come through your front door, Matt?
Sure. So they're selling a package of two things. The first one is a connected sort of smart, quote-unquote, door lock, and that's tied to a security camera that can speak to Amazon servers and sort of the pair of things when a delivery driver comes on. The camera turns on, and the driver is able to, if they're authorized, unlock the door.
So this would be a pre-authorization. If I've got this Amazon smart lock on my front, on my door, what, they just approach it, it will recognize them, open up, and then they come with the delivery?
Yeah, basically. You have to have, obviously, there has to be a delivery-specific specific request tied to this. You know, Amazon people can't just show up any time.
Right.
But, you know, as long as there's delivery in the pipeline, the driver pings Amazon servers, Amazon makes sure it's the right person, the right package, and at the right time, and then the whole system sort of kicks off from there.
You said there's a camera. Who's watching that camera, or is it just for review later? Or does it ping me if it's my house and I can watch it on my smartphone? I don't know.
So it actually will ping you. The camera is yours. You can... just as you have on your smartphone, you get a notification when the driver shows up. You can choose to either watch the delivery live, you can watch it later. And then the camera also sort of records a video of, you know, whatever happened during that delivery period for at least 24 hours.
So this is for Amazon Prime members, is that right, Matt?
It is, yeah. Initially, it's limited to members of their $99 a year membership program.
And there's an additional cost with it? You have to put some money up to get this system on your door?
Yep, the whole package of the camera and the smart lock cost $250 at launch.
What's driving this Amazon offering? Why are they doing it, Matt?
So I think part of it is sort of a headache you know, folks have if a package disappears from your doorstep, whether it's a, you know, botched delivery or something got stolen by a neighbor, you know, what have you. There's no great data on how pervasive that problem is, but it is sort of a headache for folks. So this is sort of designed to help eliminate that. But then there's also sort of a school of thought that people really do want this this convenience to sort of get the thing inside your door rather than having to pick it up or you know, risk the rain, et cetera.
What does the rollout for this look like? Do they have it active already, or when will it be available where?
It'll launch November 8th in 37 cities, basically sort of all of the large markets where Amazon offers sort of quick delivery. That's the initial footprint for it.
Have they given any estimates of what kind of pickup they expect on this? How many thousands or hundreds of thousands of Amazon customers they expect to take advantage of it?
No, they haven't. Amazon tends to keep numbers pretty close to the vest. You know, an outside analyst really don't know what to make of this one either, especially given it's going to be a limited pilot again at launch, but we'll see.
And Matt, how does this relate to drone delivery, which Jeff Bezos has made a lot of in recent years, and Amazon, by all appearances, continues to really work toward? Are these linked, or it's just all about getting stuff to you.
It's all about giving stuff to you in sort of, you know, as creative and ideally quick and convenient ways as they can think of. In addition to, you know, obviously they're working on drone delivery. They're also, they've experimented with getting things into your car trunk. Now all of a sudden they're doing in-home delivery. They've got delivery lockers. They're just a bunch of experiments Amazon has cooking to try different ways to get people goods.
Matt Day is right there in Seattle, current headquarters for HQ1 for Amazon. And Matt, we've got questions for you about Amazon Key. Richard is in Rockholds, Kentucky. Richard, you're on the air with Matt Day in Seattle. Thanks for calling. What are you thinking?
Hello. I am just concerned about what kind of end-user license agreement an Amazon member would be obligated to agree to, say something were to end up missing or broken, or say your home would be left unlocked by mistake by mm-hmm. a delivery person. Mm-hmm. I just think it could cause a lot of issues.
What about the user agreement around this, Matt? Have you looked at it and those concerns that Richard raises?
That's a great question. I have not seen the text of the user agreement itself, but Amazon has addressed sort of the broader question of, you know, what happens if a pet gets out, or what happens if a lock is botched. And they say, you know, they promise that they will work for with you in sort of a customer service way, that, you know, they have a good reputation for that sort of stuff. But no, I haven't seen the fine print. That's a great question, sort of what the liability looks like for that.
And the concern if something goes missing, I mean, yes, there's supposed to be a video here. I guess if there's nothing within reach, the idea is they would just come through the door and not really much further than that. But what if, I don't know, somebody's, you know, lovely potted plant by the front door goes missing?
Yeah, exactly right. And I'm not sure we know that until this rolls out and they start to get disputes related to that service. But, you know, one of the things they have promised is they say, you know, that the logistics folks who will be physically delivering these things, Amazon's going to require the companies they hire for that to put people through a background check, at least some basic level of security. But, you know, again, who knows? We'll see.
It's interesting. People with all different levels of comfort around this. So many people getting so accustomed now to deliveries that they maybe they'll like it if that package is safe and secure inside the door via Amazon. John in Burlington, Vermont. John, you're on with Matt Day in Seattle. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm not concerned. The situation could be a box that opens and you put stuff in it. The box could be of any size, and it doesn't have to have anything connection to the inside of the house.
But that's not what they're talking about here. You get that, John, right? They're talking about your front door.
I understand that,
yeah.
But as this thing evolves,
yeah,
that's what's going to happen. And then and the box should actually be a separate door into your house. You access it from inside, and they access it from the outside, and they never get in. The lead in is also to the drone port that will be on your roof. You'll have a box up there. The drone will approach it. A door will open. Because it's able to do that, drops off your package and goes down a dumbwaiter and you got in your house. And that's the drone approach.
John, I see you're thinking it through. Matt Day, how about, I mean, it's so interesting when you talk about opening the house and people get creative in a hurry. John's thinking this will evolve towards some kind of box, but maybe it evolves the other way. You know, maybe Amazon will end up walking right into your kitchen and putting that. They bought Whole Foods, a grocery store. Maybe they'll put the stuff right in the fridge. Is there which way do you see this going, Matt?
No, I think the latter, definitely. Amazon is they don't tend to try to ask complicated things of customers, right? They go for a low profile. That's right. Why rather than being this being a box, you know, it's something that's, you know, pretty, you know, easy to install, relatively speaking. I think they want to prioritize convenience rather than, you know, asking you to drill holes in your ceiling to receive a drone delivery or something like that.
What about the drone delivery? How did Jeff Bezos interpret or imagine that as far as Amazon's talked about it? Was it fly past and drop it on the doorstep or the sidewalk or something fancier? Do we know?
Yeah, at least in the sort of promotional videos that they used to introduce the concept, they were talking about sort of front door or back door delivery, nothing sort of inside the house. But, you know, like a lot of Amazon things, this was a very forward-looking experiment. It's pretty unclear how quickly that becomes reality.
Recently, the Trump administration has kind of opened some more skies to testing for that. Can you tell us what's going on there, Matt?
Yeah, so the Trump administration recently relaxed sort of the rules governing whether you can, in what circumstance you can test drones, right? Previously, it was a very federally controlled thing, and they sort of walked that back a little bit, which it was a point of contention between Amazon and the feds that Amazon wanted sort of free reign to test this stuff. The FAA was sort of slow in their eyes and moving, and so they moved a lot of their sort of drone testing and experimentation work overseas.
We had a big stock bump last week. Why were investors so happy with Amazon?
So Amazon destroyed expectations for their earnings that they reported on Thursday. Wall Street just continues to be pleased with the performance they show, and it's not that they're churning off a ton of profit, but they're just growing by leaps and bounds in sales every quarter.
They've got a wholesale pharmacy license in a number of states now. Can we anticipate then Amazon delivering medicine?
You know, I'm not sure. That was a great catch, the report that spotted that. But it's what that appears to be, at least so far, is Amazon's sort of business-to-business sales program. They're selling sort of some kind of medical equipment to folks, but it's unclear whether they'd go the leap of actually selling drugs to consumers.
They're huge in the cloud. Do they dominate there? Who's bigger, Facebook or Amazon or Google?
So they dominate in a very specific corner, and that is sort of rented software services and data storage to businesses. It's a giant and growing business. Amazon is clearly the number one in that, and they're followed by Microsoft, as tends to be the going thinking.
Is there any boundary around this company, Matt? Are they worried that they'll get so dominant in so many fields that antitrust will start coming after them? Monopoly complaints.
No, I don't think they are, and I think a lot of that is the way antitrust law is structured and interpreted in the U.S., that you have to show consumer harm, essentially, in a lot of cases to make an antitrust case. And Amazon, their mantra and what they say they've shown over years is, they want to make things more convenient, lower prices for consumers rather than harm them. So I think we're a couple of steps removed from that, but, as you say, they are growing into new things, so they're going to test a new law here.
Coming right through the front door in a number of cities, November 8th, 7 cities, and on beyond that, if they get consumer acceptance. Consumers have accepted a lot when it comes to Amazon. Seen convenience and lower prices, yes. How far does it go? Matt Day with the Seattle Times. Thanks for being with us for a minute today, Matt.
Thank you, Tom.
Support for this podcast comes from Embody DNA. Ghouls and goblins aren't real, but your sweet tooth might be. Find out if there's one lurking in your DNA, keeping you close to the candy bowl. With Embody DNA, you can take an at-home test to reveal the traits that could be impacting your weight loss, fitness, and nutrition. Discover your traits today at embodydna.live/WBUR.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Amazon, ready to come through your front door with deliveries, crushing it on Wall Street, making moves on maybe delivering your prescriptions, and chased by everybody lately for HQ2, that second headquarters that they are promising to build in North America. We'll hear more about that later in this hour. You can join us. Are you ready to let Amazon delivery come right through your front door into your house? And what next? Will Amazon stock your fridge, pat around your kitchen with groceries from Whole Foods? They bought Whole Foods. How about stock your medicine cabinet? They're making TV shows. They're running so much of the cloud. Is there anything Amazon won't do that we won't want them to do? Charlotte Howard joins us right now from New York, consumer goods and marketing correspondent for The Economist. Her special report in the current issue of The Economist on Amazon and the future of e-commerce and retail is called The New Bazaar. You can link to it through our website, onpointradio.org. Charlotte Howard in New York, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It just gets bigger and wider and bigger and wider, and there's always some new proposal, and it kind of blows your hair back. Is there a limit to this, Charlotte? Is there a limit to what to this? I mean, of course, I suppose there is, but how wide does this go, the ambition of Amazon and its footprint in our lives?
So I think one thing that's interesting to note about Amazon is that we think of it as already being so vast. Obviously, given your conversation with Matt, you talked about all kinds of things, cloud computing, video coming in through your front door, and so forth, possibly getting into prescription drugs. But e-commerce is really actually in the early stages. So in America last year, it was just about 10% of total retail. And I don't think that it's going to take over and become 80% of everything that Americans spend online. But if you think about what Amazon has done so far, and if it rose from 10%, if e-commerce is a share of total retail, rose from 10% to just a third, that would be really striking in terms of how much further Amazon can go. And analysts on Wall Street think that it's going to grow possibly by, the company's going to go possibly by 20% a year through 2025. And that's the fastest growth that any big company in the history of modern business has ever achieved. So if you think about just how disruptive Amazon could be, the people who watch the company very closely think that the company has just gotten started.
Is e-commerce where we should keep our eye when we're thinking about Amazon? Or I mean, they're in TV now, of course, cloud computing, but is that still the main driver going forward?
I think there's a lot of room still to go for e-commerce and for different types of goods that could be bought online. So Whole Foods, which it bought this year for almost $14 billion, of course, that was really important because Americans still, by and large, don't buy groceries online. Mm-hmm. They still continue to drive to stores and pick up, you know, they want to feel if a tomato's ripe and check out the meat in person and so forth. Mm-hmm. And if Amazon can use Whole Foods to really crack that nut, then it could take over a much bigger share of consumer spending. But you're right that there are many other areas that Amazon continues to invest in and where it might continue to grow. So if you talk to any Amazon executive, they always go back to something that Jeff Bezos has said for a long time, which is that Amazon wants to be Earth's most customer-centric company. And I mean, that could mean anything, right? It's just such a broad mission. And so there are lots of areas where it could continue to expand. I think one area that's worth watching is what happens with Alexa. So Alexa, of course, is its virtual assistant that is operated mainly through the Echo in your home, and it can buy goods through Amazon. It can play music. It can do all kinds of things. But Amazon's not alone in competing in this space. Every big tech company is investing there. And the reason why they are is because they think that a voice assistant could become the interface between the physical and digital worlds, kind of the operating system for your life, whether it's in your car or at home or as you move through your day. And so if Amazon can control that, that really gives a hint of just how broad its scope could be going forward in terms of infiltrating little activities throughout your day.
I mean, you start out talking about retailing books at the beginning of Amazon, and now we're into basically selling nearly everything. And now, maybe in the future, talking about Amazon as the operating system for your life, your phrase there, Charlotte, that's pretty compelling. Here's a little bit of the sound of Amazon's CEO, Jeff Bezos. This was at the Internet Association's big, they had a charity gala in Washington this spring. Bezos talked about how Amazon has, and in some cases hasn't, been successful in getting customers to adopt their latest innovations. Here's Bezos.
At Amazon, we've invented a lot of things that customers did not care about at all. And believe me, they were not disruptive to anyone. So it's only when customers like the new way that anything becomes disruptive. You know, if somebody comes to you with a business plan that they claim is disruptive, you should ask them to explain it to you in simpler language. And the simpler language is, why are customers going to adopt this? Why are they going to like it? Why is it better than the traditional way?
Jeff Bezos questions, kind of the Jeff Bezos philosophy embedded there. What about their disruption and where you see it? I mean, if e-commerce is just 10% of retail in the U.S. now, and if people buy that it might go to one-third, let's just take that as a, what might that mean in terms of further disruption? And of course, this is, in Amazon's view, a good thing, this kind of disruption. What kind of disruption might we see, Charlotte?
Well, first, just to respond to Jeff Bezos's comment there about their experimentation, that's one of the things that makes Amazon so hard to compete against, because they have a huge amount of cash that they're constantly using to experiment in different areas. Yeah. And they're very happy, as he said, for some of those things to fail. But a lot of those things don't fail. And other companies do not have the latitude to make similar experiments. They don't have the support from investors on Wall Street, and they may not have the talent internally to hire the top, to be able to track the top data scientists and so forth. So you see Amazon with this kind of relentless experimentation. Relentless.com, by the way, was the name that Jeff Bezos originally wanted to call Amazon.
Oh, wow.
Some of your your listeners may know, but that they have this kind of relentless approach to continuing to try more and more things, and that's what makes them so disruptive as a company. As for how disruptive they could be, any time that Amazon makes an announcement, or even if there's a rumor that Amazon might do something, the stocks for the companies that are in the industries that might be disrupted, whether it's grocery or pharmacies, et cetera, take a hit pretty quickly. I think that Amazon is seen as probably the most disruptive tech company out there in terms of how many industries it could affect. For retail specifically, in terms of its disruption, it's just very, very hard for a lot of retailers to keep up. That doesn't mean it's impossible if you offer something that Amazon doesn't. So if you have a product that's not available on Amazon, you know, Zara, which is owned by Inditex, a Spanish company, they've done really well with their selection of clothes. You see TJ Maxx doing really well. They sell designer clothes at a bargain. If you offer something that isn't available online, you can do really well, or if you offer a great experience in a store. But there are lots of companies out there that kind of offer things that are okay, and consumers don't really like going there. I don't know about you, but I'd love it if someone waited on me in some kind of really luxurious experience, but I don't really love standing in line to buy laundry detergent. You know, so I think those types of retailers are really in trouble, and you'll see them continue to struggle going forward.
I mean, that kind of disruption gets very, very concrete, right? This changes the landscape of what we have in our cities and towns. Retailers may just blink out. I hear them talking about it all the time when I go into retail establishments.
Yes, you've seen a lot of store closures this year, and I think you're just seeing the beginning. So America in particular, compared with other rich countries, has much, much more mall space per person. Mm-hmm. So, for example, there's more mall space per person in America, five times as much as in Britain. So we have just an overbuilt retail environment, and a lot of those are going to close. That doesn't mean that every store is going to close, but there will be a lot more closing in the future. And part of the reason for that is retailers have no choice but to expand online to compete with Amazon. But as they expand online, they can cannibalize their sales from their existing stores, which makes their existing stores less profitable. They have to try to hire people to build up their e-commerce businesses. Amazon has built in this expectation that shipping should be really fast and inexpensive. Mm-hmm. So retailers have to match that. All that means that it's just very, very hard for retailers to maintain their old business models.
Charlotte Howard with The Economist. Please stand by there in New York. Scott Galloway joins us right now. He's author of the new book, The Four, The Hidden DNA of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. Professor of marketing at the NYU's Stern School of Business. Scott Galloway, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So we talked to Matt Day in Seattle. He's looking at Amazon. He said, you know, their promise is to make things cheaper and more convenient. Who can argue with that?
Well, yeah, as your previous guests have said, there's one type of person that likes Amazon, and that's consumers. It's
hard
to
argue. That's a pretty big body of people.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to argue that Amazon hasn't been great for consumers.
And so, do we just go on here? Does it gobble up the world and consumers are better served and we just have a new kind of regime, fewer brick-and-mortar stores, all kinds of services, an operating system, voice-controlled for your life? Amazon runs it all and hunky-dory?
Well, so traditional antitrust, as your previous guest has talked about, is largely based on if it's good for the consumer, we're going to leave you alone. And so far, the argument has been that Amazon is good for the consumer. And when you look at its market share, unlike Google, which by traditional antitrust standards is probably more vulnerable, Amazon doesn't have that dominant a share in any one category. It's about 30% in the cloud, but in overall retail, it's about 4%. In streaming media, it's even less. So by traditional economic or share standards, it doesn't appear to be a threat. Mm-hmm. But there's some very uncomfortable things about Amazon. So, for example, our tax base. We're not used to a company growing to $500 billion and not being profitable. So as a result, Amazon has paid $1.4 billion in corporate tax since the recession, and Walmart has paid $64 billion, despite the fact that Amazon has added the value of Walmart to its market capitalization.
That's pretty crazy. And we should explain, they're not profitable because they keep moving into new areas, and they're huge revenues, but not profits in the traditional sense.
Well, they invest 100 cents in the dollar back in the consumer experience, which is great for consumers, but it creates an environment that is very difficult to operate for any other competitors. As Mickey Drexler, the former CEO of Gap and J. Crew said, how do you compete with a big company that doesn't want to be profitable? And what you have is a company that can go into non-core categories such as streaming video and overnight be the second largest funder of original content. Facebook and Apple spend $1 billion. ABC, NBC, two large networks, spend $4 billion. Amazon will spend $4.5 billion on original content this year, just $2 billion behind Netflix, who increased their budget when they heard Amazon's footsteps. So to use a war analogy, at the end of World War II, the Germans had better machinery, better morale, mm-hmm. better troops, but the Allies had 38 gallons of gasoline for every one the Third Reich had because we had cut off their supply lines. Amazon is the business that can show up with 38 gallons of gasoline to any core category because its stock keeps going up and it has access to almost infinitely cheap capital.
Charlotte, is that a problem, or that's just a recipe for, yes, recreating the world, in a way that's more convenient and cheaper?
This is a debate that I think is going to become more and more intense going forward as Amazon continues to grow. Scott made the very good point about its low cost of capital and how it can continue. It just has the latitude. Investors have given it the latitude to continue to invest in other categories. With each passing week, there's another announcement from Amazon. I love Jeff Bezos had a quote a while ago, something along the lines of "Your margin is my opportunity,"
yeah.
And that's a really frightening. That's a really frightening approach.
And their stock's at an all-time high, even without profit, because people see the expansion.
Yeah, I think that one thing that is going to happen across the tech industry is that antitrust regulators need to think differently about what we call network effects, which are when companies can benefit from a sort of virtuous cycle where the more customers they have, in Amazon's case, the more customers it has, the more sellers it attracts to its platform, which broadens the selection of goods, which results in more sales, which gives it more cash to invest in more services and more data to hone its offerings and find new ones. It just has this kind of virtuous cycle that in Amazon's case has become something of a tornado. And antitrust regulators haven't really figured out how to think about the power of data in particular. And I think that this is going to become something that is much more prevalent in the debate going forward. Amazon just knows so much about so many businesses and customers on its site and who use its platform. So I think antitrust action immediately is very unlikely.
Scott,
I think it's something that will come up.
Is this dominance and disruption a problem, or is it just creating a new, more convenient world for consumers?
Well, that's the fundamental question I think we're going to start wrestling with, and that is, for the first time, we're going to question the notion. We're going to start asking, if it's good for the consumer, is it always good for society? Charlotte referenced earlier, Amazon is now capable of what I refer to as Jedi mind tricks, and that is, it can begin inflicting pain on other consumer companies before just by wishing ill on it. Between the time Amazon announced the acquisition of Whole Foods and when it closed, mm-hmm. Kroger, the largest pure-play grocer in the U.S., lost a third of its value. And this is because Amazon purchased a grocer that's 1/11th the size of Kroger. Mm-hmm. Amazon just hints they might be in prescription drugs or the drugstore business. CVS and Walgreens down 4% and 5% respectively. So we have a company. I believe Amazon could take the value of any consumer stock down 20% to 30% within 30 days just by issuing press releases.
If I hold their stock, that's a problem. But is it a problem in a bigger sense?
Well, it probably is. Access to capital is the kind of the mother's milk of growth and fair competition. And one of the defining principles of a market is no one company has an outsized influence on that marketplace. And we may be getting to a point that distinct of traditional antitrust metrics, you have one company that can literally muscle any other consumer company out of the way. Amazon can start soaking or sucking the oxygen out of a room such that when it shows up, its competitors are weak before it's even entered the room or the sector. So yeah, it's, you know, the bottom line is tax policy and antitrust has not kept pace with this new group of innovators. We've just never seen anything like this before.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Amazon, ready to come through your front door with deliveries, crushing it on Wall Street, making moves on maybe delivering your prescriptions. and chased by everybody, and we'll talk about it in a few minutes, for its HQ2, a second headquarters in North America that they're very loudly talking about planning to build. You can join us this hour. Are you happy with all this, with the reach of Amazon? They're making TV shows. They're running the cloud. Is there anything Amazon won't do? Charlotte Howard of The Economist joins us right now from New York. She's been writing about it. You can link to her work at our website, onpointradio.org. Scott Galloway at NYU Stern School of Business, author of The Four, The Hidden DNA of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. Scott, report here that the NASDAQ, as of this morning, had climbed to a record high ever, empowered by Amazon and Apple shares. So there's Amazon power, you know, pushing it up. Right there to record highs on the NASDAQ today. What about, is there a downside? I mean, if you envision, Scott, Amazon continuing on this path of expansion that Charlotte describes, that you've been thinking about, describe the coming world. How's it different from what we've known?
Well, from a consumer standpoint, you can see an environment or a scenario where Amazon goes to zero click and just begins fulfilling your low consideration products automatically. I mean, open your door, go into your refrigerator with Whole Foods, zero profit margin, purchase history, credit card, a fulfillment network that puts a warehouse within 20 miles of 45% of the U.S. population. I think they could run a test now and just say, we're going to start sending you stuff before you want it.
When my baking soda isn't deodorizing my fridge anymore, it'll just show up from Amazon.
Yeah, or paper towels, or maybe you just manicure it using Alexa. You say, Alexa, barbecue for six people, Alexa Heineken versus Stella Artois, Alexa six quotes for auto insurance for a Toyota Camry. I think they're going to run this test. I think the front door camera is another piece in the puzzle. And I think they're going to announce that the prime households are going to go from $1,300 a year to $7,000. The stock's going to be...
What do you mean $7,000 in spending a year that they anticipate?
$6,000 or $7,000 a year. It'll be some exponential leap. The stock will be anti-gravity. It'll become the first trillion-dollar firm. But, you know, there are some real downsides. There's a tax-based consideration here. If Amazon pays no taxes, what does that mean when the most successful company? Well, but it hasn't so far. We keep thinking tomorrow's going to be today, but the company shows no signs of ever wanting to be profitable. Why would it want to be profitable and leak money to the government when it can reinvest back in the consumer? And fanatical investors keep pushing the stock up. So
what happens to the world in that case? While Amazon grows and grows, but the revenue that runs a lot of things in government goes away, other implications I'm sure as well. How does it change the world that's not Amazon?
Well, that's the correct question. How do we pay for our firefighters and our roads when the most successful company in the world doesn't pay taxes? How do small companies get any oxygen in the room via e-commerce when you have one company that can go into any high-margin category, whether it's drugs, books, or streaming of television, and kind of show up with infinitely cheap capital and kind of absorb all the growth and all the investment capital? So there are some very serious considerations around tax base, anti-competitive behavior, or even just job destruction. Amazon needs one person for every two that Macy's and Williams-Sonoma needs. So if you're going to grow Amazon's business $20 or $30 billion this year, which it will, you're going to see a destruction of cashiers, sales associates, and merchants that could fill up Yankee Stadium and be given their pink slip every New Year's Day. So there's some real issues here.
Cheaper products, maybe. More convenience, maybe. What side effects as well, and big ones. Joe in Columbia, South Carolina. Joe, thank you for calling. You're on with Charlotte Howard and Scott Galloway.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I'm an Amazon. I've done everything with Amazon. I wrote two books, Splitting Pennies and Splitting Bits. My project, I'm building a robot marketplace. I use Amazon Web Services when I buy stuff that I need. A computer keyboard recently, I use Amazon. So they basically have taken over my entire, every angle of my entire life and business.
Are you good with that, Joe? Is that all to the good? How do you see it?
I think it's great. I live in a rural area. They deliver everything. I don't like shopping. Amazon Web Services, the cloud, is a great platform. It's much better than we looked at all the others. So they really stay ahead of all the technology. So I think, you know, it's great. I'm glad that they've done this. If it wasn't Amazon, I don't know where I would, you know, get all of these different electronic services. For example, the publishing industry is very complicated, and Amazon Kindle just made it real simple and easy, and it works, and it's great.
Joe, you're all over it, and it's working for you, Charlotte Howard. That doesn't sound like any roadblock to Amazon going just where it pleases.
I think that Joe raises a really good point, which is that I agree with Scott that there are all kinds of effects that are worthy of attention and probably a change in regulation. But we also do need to acknowledge that in some senses, Amazon has really encouraged competition in precisely the way that Joe described, that small entrepreneurs can use Amazon Web Services. Amazon Web Services provides the infrastructure for all kinds of young tech startups, increasingly big companies too. But this is sort of the computing power that gives juice to all kinds of small companies. And as for competition on the e-commerce platform itself, it used to be that big brands really could kind of rest on their laurels and spend a lot on a TV campaign. They could get prime placement in grocery stores with shelving fees and so forth, and crowd out small brands. And it is much easier these days for a small brand to come up and challenge a big food company, a big maker of any other type of consumer product. So in some ways, Amazon really has been good for competition. And that's part of the problem for regulators thinking about the company going forward, because you don't want to do away with the benefits to consumers, and you don't want to do with the benefits to smaller companies. At the same time, the growth of Amazon really does raise broader issues that need to be addressed. So I think that's part of why you haven't seen action on Amazon to date.
Craig in Woodstock, Georgia. Craig, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, thanks for taking my phone call. Sure. I'm taking a contrarian point of view, almost Orwellian. I will not let the fox into the chicken coop into my house for many, many reasons, because I don't need the government. I don't need data of mine being shared out there, especially with Jeff owning Washington Post. I'm really concerned about what is his play in the long run as far as the data and how it's going to be used. And that's my biggest concern, is that we haven't even begun to dig into the tip of the iceberg of what is going on behind the scenes. That scares me very, very much.
I appreciate your call, Craig. Scott, is there something to be scared about here? Are we going to like the world outside of Amazon services? And what about that amassed power?
So the concentration of data, most consumers, if you look at their purchase patterns, are comfortable with a certain level of kind of violation of their privacy as long as there's utility. And Amazon does a great job of offering utility in exchange for some data, including your purchase patterns. I would argue that thus far, the data and the fears around Amazon aren't quite as threatening or as concerning as some of the data fears around, for example, a Facebook or a Google that sort of know what you're planning on doing, know where you are, know your personal preferences around a lot more than just your consumer product. So, yeah, your caller's concern, I think a lot of people have concerns around privacy or data, but for the most part, Amazon, for example, hasn't been weaponized by Russia, which some of these platforms have been. So I would argue that of big tech, the fears around data seem to be, correctly or incorrectly, less severe around Amazon than some of the other platforms.
And the world that evolves outside of Amazon's ambit, are we going to like it? Gets more convenient inside, maybe cheaper too. What about the rest of the world as we live in it?
Well, I want to acknowledge some of the upside. They're the number one recruiter out of my class at Stern. They're pushing up the salaries of very bright young
business school,
kids. And America, on the whole, I just think it'd be hard to argue that we don't register a net benefit from big tech. There's a lot of competition, growth. They're the pride and the envy of the free world. There isn't a country that wouldn't take these headquarters in exchange for all the downside. The question is, do we end up in some sort of dystopia where everybody has a powerful phone, can get things delivered within an hour, but doesn't have a job, and there are no firefighters to come get them if they have a fire?
Charlotte, last word goes to you on that.
Gosh, I mean, Amazon, I think, has brought a lot of benefits to a lot of different types of consumers and to small businesses. I think going forward that it's going to continue to push other businesses to be better. You can't be mediocre in the way that you were before, but that there are going to be bigger societal issues, whether it's unemployment among retail workers, what to do with these stores that close, that governments are really going to have to grapple with and have not come to terms with yet.
Watch this vast space. Charlotte Howard writes about it for The Economist. You can link to her, The New Bazaar, at our website, onpointradio.org. Charlotte, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Scott Galloway's new book is The Four. He joined us from NYU Stern School of Business. Scott, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
In a moment, where Amazon may go to build that second headquarters, this is On Point.
Thanks, guys.
When Amazon put out word it plans to build a second headquarters, its so-called HQ2, somewhere in North America, mayors and governors jumped at the chance. 238 proposals from Canada's Yukon Territory to the Mexican state of Chihuahua, with lots of American towns and cities in between. Who gets it is still just a guessing game. My next guest has a guess of his own, but listen to just a little of the kind of appeal that's been out there. Cities and across the country making this mad dash to win Amazon's pick for the location for that headquarters. This is Mayor Jason Larry of Stonecrest, Georgia, proposing a rather creative offer for the company with Tyler Matheson on CNBC's Power Lunch earlier this month. The mayor's pitch, a city that Amazon could call its own.
You're willing to carve out this plot of land, give them their own name, and who would be the mayor of this new city?
Look, at this level, Jeff Bezos can be the mayor, CEO, king, whatever they want to call it in that area. You know, he'll be the first person that actually can have a corporate city. He'll be the first individual that can have his own post office. But the biggest piece of it, team, is that they'll have an eternal brand. They'll have a brand forever with Amazon Georgia.
Amazon Georgia, own the whole city. Jeff Bezos, you can be mayor, CEO, king, whatever you like if you come to that corner of Georgia. Well, maybe, maybe not. Alan Sloan is a columnist with The Washington Post. His recent column is headlined, Why Trump Might Be Driving Amazon HQ to Canada. You can find a link at our website, onpointradio.org. He joins me from Millburn, New Jersey. Alan Sloan, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Canada, why Canada, and where in Canada?
Well, the proposal is for somewhere in North America. And last I looked, Canada was in North America.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to some friends of mine and kicking stuff around, and suddenly Toronto just came into my head. And the more I thought about it, the more interesting it became. So I took what I said in the column as a guess that it'll go to Toronto.
And you say Donald Trump would send it there. What do you mean by that?
Or if I'm right, which is obviously a big if,
yeah.
Amazon is presumably counting on all sorts of people from around the world to help staff its headquarters. And the immigration policy in Canada towards the kind of people who you'd think Bezos would want seems to be much more favorable to them than the United States' policy is, especially given what's going on in Washington with an anti-immigration president and all of this shrieking. So I figured I'll go out there, plant this idea, and see what happens.
So a more liberal immigration policy, one thing you think Amazon might be attracted to in Toronto. What else? I mean, it's centrally located, I guess.
It's centrally located under the rules of Canada. Medical costs are, I believe, picked up by the government. I mean, you could make a case for probably all 238 of these places, which I'm sure they all may.
Yeah.
But Canada, it just struck me as an interesting idea. I hadn't seen anybody talking about Toronto. These friends of mine who are pretty sharp people who are not journalists, they were interested in Toronto. The more I thought about it, the more I figured it could be interesting, and it could well happen, and my editors at the Post agreed, so I just wrote it.
So you're saying on healthcare, they've got single-payer, universal coverage, so Jeff Bezos wouldn't have to worry about dealing with the private health insurance industry because in Canada, the government's there.
Right. He wouldn't have to pay healthcare premiums because it's part of the tax that you pay in Canada. I mean, Toronto, again, you make the case. It's an international city in many ways. It's very vibrant. It's got all of the things that the Amazon proposal has, and why not? It's Bezos. I don't know him. I've never spoken to him, but it's obvious that he thinks in unconventional ways, and when I wrote this, everyone was concentrating on various places in the United States. So I just figured, why not Canada? Because there are certain attractions.
He owns your newspaper, The Washington Post. I mean, are you do you wonder whether the United States is still Canada's big, but the United States is still overwhelmingly his major market? Would he not, or Amazon not, be concerned that there'd be kind of a backlash? What do you, after all these American towns and cities?
I mean, I don't know what he thinks. I've never spoken to him, which I said there. I've never really had any luck in having anybody at Amazon tell me anything. I don't know what he's thinking. I'm sitting here. This is, as I wrote, an educated guess.
So guess about the backlash. Do you see a backlash if Amazon put the HQ2 that everybody in the country wants in Canada?
I don't know. You tell me.
Oh, so you got opinions on immigration and on health care, but not on consumer.
You know, I don't know. Do I know what would happen? Do I know how the announcement would be made? I don't know anything. I assume there'd be some sort of backlash. Would it make any difference?
So if it goes to Canada, are you prepared to come out and say Donald Trump sent Amazon to Canada because of his position on health care and immigration?
Well, you can ask Bezos. You can probably get him on the phone. Ask Bezos. If this happens, you guys ask Bezos, and then I'll know, because he's certainly never going to talk to me.
Well, there's Alan Sloan at the Washington Post, thinking about Amazon, thinking about all of North America and where advantages may lie. His finger travels the continent and ends up in Toronto. Who knows? We'll all know soon enough. I can see all kinds of factors coming in here. There's one view. Alan Sloan, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.